Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Welcome as you get ready to get down and sit down with another edition of Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. I'm your host, Mike Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. All the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how, right now, at www.basnnewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network. Everybody doing their thing, coming in to throw their little bits in hither and yon. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. DLM the Leadbetter, Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia. Happy birthday to Cheryl Jones's mommy. We love you. And, of course, our man Travis somewhere riding the range, acting strange down south. Pat Freeman, the mighty Obad, doing as Obad do. Still working hard with his great book, The Art of the Interview, Book 1, on sale on Amazon. It's a great read. I've enjoyed it. And we'll probably go read it again in another couple of months as I get stuff sorted out in my brain. Now, as we come to the podium, of course, there's the other brothers coming. I want to make a point about journalism. Now, we know in this age of journalism, there are variations to the so-called main theme, but you have to always provide facts. Facts kill bullshit, as Brother Obi says. But more importantly, you have to have a line of speculation that allows you to chart a trend or something you see and see to its conclusion so that when you come out with it, everybody will go, "Oh, I knew that," but they really didn't because you did the work. My compadre, my partner, my brother Gary Norris Gray has said for years, we know this, years, that college football's arms race was going to proliferate to such an extent that there would be mega conferences whose sole mission would be to inhale everybody else, absorb them, engorge them, and everything would be spit out, regurgitated on their terms. I'm here to tell you that my brother and all of the years that he's talked about this, and we know it's years because we've had it as conversation on our show forever and ever, amen. And we all knew that this was the motive that Gary thought would be the end game regarding college football. And it had to do with black conferences. It had to do with white conferences. It had to do with all the conferences. Yep. So we got to give Brother G his due and award him with Negro Dama status because he's been calling this for a long time. And I cite, as exhibits A through Z, the fact that the Big Ten, Pac-12, and Atlantic Coast Conference are expected to make a formal announcement about their alignment soon, perhaps early as next week. Now, this is from the Atlantic, but the long and short of it is, long before it hit the Atlantic, it came off these airwaves, courtesy of our brother Gary Norris Gray. What up, Jake?
Man, it's crazy out here. I mean, I can't believe they actually did this.
I can.
Michael, you have schools now that are saying we're gonna leave your conference. Okay,
yeah.
You have
mm-hmm.
conferences joining conferences. You have. Players getting money,
yep,
which they should be doing mm-hmm. all along.
Yep.
This is
you gotta laugh to keep from crying, but before we go further, G, tell them who we are.
You want to go to the intro?
For almost two decades, the Black Athlete Sports Network has served as the definitive source for information about the black athlete. Whether it be historical or analytical, BASN has always celebrated the contributions of sport's most innovative and unique beings, the black athlete. In 2016, as we relaunch blackathlete.com, look for more of the same from our unique set of writers and historians. We have been and always will be the soul of sports. We are BASN.
We are BASN.
Dan Skippy.
I would say the reason why I did that years ago was because of the way the SEC was Big Brother, BB Brothers on it. I said, okay, I know this is going to happen. Now, when Big Brother took Oklahoma and Texas into their fold, it just speeded up the process. It just speeded this process up.
Yeah, it did expedite. I mean, nobody would have expected Texas and Oklahoma to say, well, we're leaving.
We're out of here.
Because, no, seriously, because these are supposedly greener pastures they're going to. Now, Texas and Oklahoma were the big fish in their own conference. And that's why this is disarming as it is. You know, we've seen from the time NIL has become a reality, there have been moves here and there. But this is like being on the checkerboard and getting a king and having that king able to just go ahead, fly around, and take all the pieces off the board.
I mean, now, this has been the craziest weekend I've ever seen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain it to people. Right? This morning, news flash, Nebraska might get suspended for doing what they did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now remember, Nebraska was the one that wanted to play. Everybody else didn't want to play in the big contest.
Right.
Nebraska wanted to play. Why was that? Why was that reason?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to tell you why. In spring training, there were rules set by the NCAA. You couldn't do X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
Nebraska said, I don't care. We're going to do it this way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. Now Nebraska might get suspended for a year for doing what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They had team meetings, they had team practices, and they played football games, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know different. And it's funny you mentioned Nebraska because Nebraska, from the time we were growing up, was a college power. You know, Nebraska had these big corn-fed motherfuckers blocking for these brothers, and they would just stomp people into the ground. They were the typical school that would beat somebody 61 to nothing if they were favored by 45 points just so they knew that they could beat the spread. Now, you know,
what made this so bad is they were 3-5 last year. 3-5.
Yeah.
And that made it even worse.
Well, see, Nebraska has shown and proved out your theorem that this is the price of doing business. They really don't care because there's so much money that they truly
believe.
They want to
play the game. They want to play the game.
They can change their luck. That's right. And this is because of the money. You know, for whatever Nebraska has done or not done in the past few years,
we can't
ignore the money. That's the reality. When college football turns on when they turn on college football in the next couple of weeks, ain't nobody going to care about who did dirt. You know, Nebraska, depending on how influential their people are, this should be put on the back burner, G. We know this because as
now I understand why the Nebraska coach was so adamant about playing it last year, because he knew that he broke the rules last year.
Of course. That's exactly it. They know they're breaking it. Listen, they're playing fast and loose with the rules because they can. Now, would say Savannah State or Texas Southern be able to get away with that? Hell no. They would jump in their black asses with both feet and punish them with impunity. We know this. But see, even a school like Nebraska, whose rep may have been tarnished somewhat, they still get over. And that's the issue here. They're not going to touch the big boys. They're not going to touch Division One schools. They're really not, because they've got...
You know, Michael, I've been thinking about this all morning.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to stop this mess is to have a commissioner of the NCAA. And they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that, Jim. They're not going to do it. You know. They don't want anyone to regulate what they're doing. And the guy who they have on paper, the pimp king, Mark Emmert, has already been re-signed to a 5-year deal. They already know what he's going to do. You know, this isn't like Goodell. See, at least in Goodell's case, he's paid by the owners to do whatever. So no matter what perceived power Goodell flexes, he can't have no effect unless it's endorsed by the rest of the owners. They pay him for this. This guy, Emmert, is a whole different story. His one-note shit has always been, well, they're getting an education. That's what they get. So they're not entirely getting paid. Well, you can't say that anymore because of NIL. But
and Michael, I'll say once again, the MEAC, the SWAC, CIAA, and the NIAC need to merge into one conference.
Listen, credit where it's due. You've been saying that since at least 2016, maybe even earlier. It still doesn't matter in the bigger picture, because I don't know if the mindsets between the four conferences see the immediacy of all of this. Now, that the three conferences, Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC, are on alignment, that's what, 36 schools? That's crazy. You know, that we saw Texas and Oklahoma say they want in on the SEC. And the SEC said, well, we've received your application, and there won't be any interest in opening up the conference and the number of groups or teams in it until at least 2025. And they said, okay, we'll wait. That's how much money we're talking about, G. They said they'll wait. This isn't like Mississippi and Mississippi State, not the also-rans, the smaller schools that don't have as much effect.
Yep.
They said it. They said it. These are football factories. These are games where y'all listen to Boomer Sooner being played and whatnot on Saturday afternoon, and Bevo will be running across the field, hopefully trying to run over an official or two. But, you know, you get the idea. There is just too much cash. And as our brother Tony McClain says, there's a payroll that must be met. So clearly these three conferences decided they're going to make for facilitating the payroll.
Well, what's going to happen is somebody's going to get more greedy, if that's possible. But they'll be more greedy. I believe there's going to be a war between the SEC and these three governors. Now, what can happen? Somebody's all boarding.
Mm-hmm.
They can be a massive Eastern suburbs.
See, they're after their ass now. Listen to that shit. But yeah.
They're after me right now.
Gary, you better roll your ass on out of here. But yeah. But seriously, as we have our brother Tony McClain to the mix, this was a matter of when. And now when has hit. And Tony, as we bring you into the mix, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC decided they're going all in and all at the competition. And we are giving our brother Gary Negro Domus points because he's been saying this shit for at least 5 years. Can you hear us?
Mm-hmm. Car 54, where are you?
I love that show.
I knew Gary was exasperated when he called me yesterday. You know, saying, you know, I'm trying to figure out a name because I'm like, you know, let's see, the Magnificent Seven is already taken. So I mean, what is it going to be like the big pack 46 or however they're gonna wind up doing it.
How about Cerberus, the three-headed hound of hell?
Who's the one that fought? I know I'm messing up the name. Jirhad, the three-headed beast or whatever. The one that had the sequel from Godzilla.
There you go. Yes. Guys, you in a house. All that good shit.
Yeah.
A three-headed dragon. That's true.
Yeah. It's look. This is a money grab. It was a money grab 20 years ago. It's even more of a money grab now. But what's kind of weird is, and I was relating this to Gary when I was talking with yesterday. Now, the whole Texas thing, Texas and Oklahoma. Now, let's be honest, they're not doing this because of hoops. This is strictly a football thing. Because
that's right.
The thing, see, with a lot of this, and whether it's an HBCU conference or a HWC conference, it's how you define yourself. Do you look at yourself as a football school or do you look at yourself as a basketball school? Now, a lot of these schools, some of them look at themselves as both. And in some instances, the basketball, I'll use UConn as an example. Now, UConn football, the best thing you can say about UConn football is that the helmets are nice. That's pretty much where you can go there. Now basketball, both the now and with UConn, you know, the women's team probably generates more than the men in most instances. Although the men has had their, you know, the men have had their day, and of course they're still the only ones to bum rush the title in the same year. But with this smorgasbord that they're attempting to do here, it may help some schools, but it may hurt. It depends on how you see yourself. Now look at like Rutgers and Maryland joining the Big 14 for lack of a better phrase. It hasn't been 10 since like, you know, forever. But
true,
you know, if you look at it football wise, you're saying, but see, it will eventually build up. I mean, but not for basketball. It's a lateral move in a sense because both of them have had great basketball history, but football. For all the success that they have in hoops, those schools are going to make it up in football because they're going to tear them a new you know what.
You know that.
The time.
That's exactly
now,
but see, this is, you know, the thing I think that bothers the majority of us in this is that college sports is all territorial.
Yeah.
You know, it's all
yes.
region-wise. All
mm-hmm.
of these conferences mobilizing the way they are literally, you know, tears a hole in you know, into territorial rivalries, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's really interesting that if Nebraska and Oklahoma ever play each other again in football, it's going to
mm-hmm.
be a non-conference game. Now, that was like a
standard.
Granted, you know,
yeah.
now that was like a standard, you know, that was like a standard for every November, you know?
It sure
then,
was.
You know,
that's right.
And either one or both of them was always in the national title hunt. Now,
yep.
needless to say, Nebraska has gone a whole different way over the years. And Oklahoma, they've, you know, back and forth, back and forth. But,
right.
again, to me, it's like it literally, you know, pisses on traditional rivalries. It's literally just about a money grab. And I don't
That's
now,
true.
Now, again, if you're looking at the schools that are going to try to do this, now, in some instances, because of tradition, the rivalries make sense, you know, it makes somewhat sense. Like, if Colorado
right.
goes up against Oklahoma, that's traditional because
okay.
that's old Big Eight football. But
right.
UCLA versus Florida State, now that's
no,
that, now that's the, that, but no,
that
now, now
mm-hmm.
that's basketball. I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds like a
exactly.
opening round game in the tournament for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sounds like an 8-9 or a 12 or a 5-12 matchup in the tournament, but for football,
mm-hmm.
it sounds more like a bowl game. And, you know,
well, you make an excellent point regarding basketball and football schools because you're right. Basketball gives you a sense of parity because we know on any given whatever, team A can beat team B because the rosters are significantly smaller. So the talent possibilities can get spread out further. But when it comes to football, we are talking naked cash here. And when the teams play, you don't ever get the impression that a team is going to work their way up. When
no.
you mentioned Rutgers, I was thinking about all of the money, as our brother Patrick Farrar talks about, all of the money Rutgers invested in getting to the Big Ten just so they could get some of that big money. And even though they don't have a championship to their name, even though their bowl games aren't significantly bigger, we know they're making money because they get a little sum from every game that every other school in the conference makes. We got Radio
well,
Reggie
yeah,
with
yeah.
us.
That's why, and see, that's, you got to remember, that's why.
The Missouri Valley governs, the Ohio Valley governs, and the Big Ten. What do they do?
You know what, Gary? They do what they still do. Look, this is whenever stuff like this happens, it's never about them because they're going to get a certain level of players, whether they have these, whether we get the Big 46 or not.
Mm-hmm.
They're going mm-hmm. to get a certain amount of money, athletes, or what have you. Now, what they probably to me, they don't really need to try to compete. If they went out and tried to compete with the five families, then it will hurt them because you're not going to be able to meet them on a level field for recruiting or
exactly.
for money wise. Now, if you should have a team, now if you should get instance where one of those teams makes a run, that can help the conference. But see, what usually winds up happening in a lot of instances is, and I'll give a perfect example, is Gonzaga in basketball and Clemson in football. They were okay programs for many years. But then they had a run, a national run for a, you know, for a long period of time, and it changed. They went from being a local to being a and UConn here. When they had that first run under Calhoun, and this was before this wasn't the year that they won the championship. It was the year that they beat Clemson with the Tate George shot, and then in turn got beat in by Duke, 1 second away from the final, from their first Final Four. But that week, you know, those 2 weeks, they went from being a local New England Eastern power to becoming a national power. And look at, and remember, look at how the roster changed. Remember, they were getting players from all over the country. They wind up getting guys like, look, they would always get the number one recruit from Connecticut and maybe the number two recruit from Jersey and maybe like the number three recruit from New York. But see, now they get folks from Israel, they get folks from California, they get folks from South Carolina, and so on and so forth. When you go from being a local to a national power, everything changes. Now, to Gonzaga's credit, they stayed in the West Coast Conference. I'm sure that they, I'm sure that like the Pac-10 has come to them and says, you know, why don't y'all come over here with the big boys? And they probably said, nah, I'm full. I'm good. We good here. And
I got a question for y'all. I know y'all rolling with this, but this thing with the ex-Angel picture was Tyler's Shaggy, the one that passed away and was found dead in his hotel room a couple years ago. Are y'all familiar with that story?
Yeah, it was drug related.
But what got me is that, and again, I apologize for the role y'all got going. It just pisses me off that the local media had just brushed over this, that OxyContin was being traded in this organization with the Angels and other individuals, and you ain't heard really a fucking peep about it. Now, I know you might hear something, Gary, but they've been real kind of low-key with this. I mean,
we'll see, because put it this way, I'll even take it a little bit further. You think the Angels are the only team that's involved in this?
Hell no. That's my point.
Just to put a cap on it, it's just that nobody else has player has died of it, as far as we know. Because like a Daryl Kyle, he died of a mysterious overdose a few years back, and they always tried to play it off that, you know, he was troubled. Whenever whenever it's been, because see, now they made it a point to go after Mr. Fernandez when they found that there was traces of marijuana in his when he was killed on the boat ride, and they even went so far as to say, when Miami honored him with a statue, you know, he shouldn't be honored with a statue because of the way. And I got two words for you. And you know what? I got two words for you. Roy Halladay.
I got better. Mickey Mouse. How about Mickey Mouse, a.k.a. Mr. Yankee, Mickey Mouse. Mr. Alcohol drunk when they gave him a fucking liver.
The Halladay thing is more glaring because he was perceived as a hero because he threw a fucking baseball. You know, the guy was a fucking drug addict.
And
they'll never say that. Just like they'll say brothers are thugs, they'll never say this white guy was a fucking junkie. But that's exactly what the fuck he was.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's you know, again, it's that whole racial double standard. And see, if they're not white, they have to whatever. Because, see, here's the funny thing, not to go too far off. Fernando Tatis. I'm talking with a friend of mine, and, you know, we got to talking about, you know, the faces of the game or what have you. And, you know, he said, who you think is the face of the game? I said, well, considering he's on the cover of MLB The Show, and what have you and what happened, whatever, you know, maybe, you know, he's probably the face of Major League Baseball for now, for at least for the young kids. And then, of course, he gets in the end of, well, he's a bit of a thug, isn't he? I'm like, where, okay, you know, give me an example. Well, you know, the whole, the way he carries himself and all the other stuff. I'm like, now, if that's a white guy that's doing that, you're just saying it's the fun of the game. Mm-hmm. Why is it, you know, because when he shows a little sweat, and also the thing that they forget,
what you're saying is Bryce Harper.
Oh, but see, I don't have a problem with Harper. I don't have a problem with Trout. But see, the thing is, it's that whole how they want us to see.
I got a problem, Harper, because he thinks he's better than what he really is.
I never got that with him. I mean,
Harper's a kid. You got to understand his mentality. He came into the league basically at 18 years old. And
they wanted
him given money and kinds of platitudes that nobody expected for somebody that young. He's not an old 18.
Mike, you got to remember, you go back to the cover story. They wanted him to be baseball's version of LeBron.
Yes, exactly.
And he hasn't, and he hasn't
exactly
even won. He hasn't even won half as much as
no.
LeBron has done.
He
has not. I mean, now
can't even move. Exactly.
Well, wait,
no,
guys,
no,
guys,
no.
They're both all over this guy from Japan, Johnny, and because he's from Japan, they got a problem. They got a real problem with baseball.
Oh, well, sure.
They
want these guys
to be superstars, and every time a minority is better than them, and they going nuts over this. This guy should be MVP, the guy from Japan. MVP.
I think, especially this way, if he winds up hitting 50 homers, which it looks like he's going to do, the only misfortune here is that, look, the fact that the Angels are literally a middle of the road club, you know,
there you go.
It hurts in a sense because one, you know, the whole East Coast West Coast bias. Although to his credit, his game has surpassed that because of what he's done. That hasn't been a factor at all, at least so far. But the thing is, look, they still want their face of the league. They still want the face of their league to be white. That's the problem. I think with Ohtani, they're willing to, dare I say it, whiteify him because it's trying very hard. But you know what? To his credit, his game speaks that. I mean, the reason why they kind of don't want to embrace him all the way is because he brings up the dreaded, you know, Rosetta Stone of baseball, Babe Ruth. And see,
there you go.
They don't want to kill. I mean, Babe Ruth has been dead for damn near 100 years, but they still want to keep him alive. Now, granted, when Babe was doing the pitching and the hitting, you didn't have the All-Star game there. But that being said, you know, Ohtani has already done something that the Babe never did, and he was able to start and pitch in the All-Star game. He doesn't.
There you
go. His own DA. He's his own DH. They don't even have a DH when he pitches. He just, you know, he bats or whatever. But
that is
the
cool
thing, you know, and we'll see. Baseball sort of wants it both ways. They want to embrace their history and their past, but then when you get somebody that surpasses that, well, he's no whatever, and he is, always winds up being, he's no dead white guy, for lack of a better word.
Exactly, because now the paradigm has shifted. Back in the day, a team could top themselves and say, well, we got Spawn and Sane, and we'll pray for rain. Now, for the Angels is we got Ohtani and Trout and figure that shit out. Because they can't handle Trout this year.
And they don't even have Trout this year, too, because he's been hurt. So it's, but basically.
But guys, real quick, what you guys think about staying on baseball? Okay, the Liverpool World Series, they named the different divisions the Tom Steve and the Hank Aaron division. I say this for two reasons. Number one, we can have no international teams because of the obvious reason with the COVID-19. Number two, Monique Davis, they had her come back. And number three, they had a young European girl that was a catcher. And I must admit, I was impressed with it. She got a good hit. I don't know if the team from Texas won or not, but
She's really good.
I mean, she swung that bat better than me. My ass couldn't hit the ball like that.
I go back, me personally, I wish I could hit like a girl. me personally, I go back and forth with the Little League World Series. To me, it's exploitation. It really is. I mean, even when Monet Davis was up there, you know, it was exploitation. Because they're hyping up these kids at that age where they're either going to do something with the rest of their life or fall off the face of the earth. God forbid.
Yeah.
And see, like I said, I go back and forth. I must admit, I have not watched any of the Little League World Series this year. For whatever reason. But I go back and forth with it because, you know, I saw how they messed over. I saw how they tried to exploit Monet, and then also I still can't get over the fact how they fucked over that Chicago Jackie Robinson team.
Oh man,
Jason, take the trophy,
yeah, bring your ass here and take it. Watch what happens. They didn't put that in Chicago, did they?
Whenever there's been a controversy that involves a non-white kid, they're ruthless. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why I go back and forth with the Little League, because you know it's bad enough that we have to deal with this shit with grown ass men and grown ass women. But now we're literally and figuratively dealing with the kids, where they're going to try to sort of make them, you know, I mean,
it's a bit much.
It's good to, you know, if you're watching it strictly on just a baseball, whatever, it's fun. But I can't get past the exploitive nature. And because it's right in the mouse's wheelhouse for overhype and everything. So I can't a lot of time. If I got a choice of either watching a major league game or a little league game, probably gonna watch the major league game because I'm used to the bullshit there.
It is exploitation because they are going out of their way to grasp at whatever straws they can. Baseball knows they're lagging behind every other major sport. They can't drum up a way to make the sport more appealing to younger folks because they are thinking football and basketball. And they can't hit that magic formula, if there is one, that makes everybody say, oh, you know what? I can get down into watching a baseball game again and have the same feeling that they did years ago. It ain't working. They're going to have to come up with some new marketing strategy to make it appealing to younger people because younger folks ain't watching right now.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the kids, the players that the kids identify with, the Tatises of the world, the Tim Andersons and others, they don't want to push them. Plain and simple. We sort of use Trout and Harper as somewhat whipping boys. Again, for the most part, I don't have a problem with them, but it's more so the hype and the over the top.
That's exactly
more than anything else with them. Because look, clearly they're good ball players. That's always been my thing, because see, what winds up happening is they will dislike Tatis to the point where they'll say, well, he's not that good of a ball player, which is bullshit. He's a great ball player.
Bullshit.
You know, but see, but therein lies the problem. Go ahead.
This is the problem, as I'm seeing it. LeBron James has made everybody money. He has won championships.
I couldn't help myself, Gary. I'm sorry, Gary. I couldn't help myself.
But see, they told Bryce Harper, they told other white guys, they told Trout, you got to do this for us. You know, you got to be Roy Hobbs. You got to be able to make baseball work like that. You know, you can't have this nigga out here making everybody money and you not trying to make us money too. Because that's really what this is. There's a level of resentment underneath all of this that Bryce Harper, for whatever good a guy he may be, he can't turn the numbers like LeBron does. For Mike Trout, as good as he is, he can't turn the numbers like the cash cow. And because of it, they're pissed because they don't know what else the fuck to do. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? And now you got this Asian brother coming in here, maybe rocking with 50 home runs and pitching his ass off. We're stupefied. We don't know what else to do.
If the Angels messed up, if the Angels were in the playoffs,
if they were at least contending, because see, you know,
yeah.
I had said, you know, going into the season, I had said, and I don't regret saying it. My thing was, you know, if you really want to contend, and I know, you know, he's great and all that, but you need to make him your second or third starter if you really want to contend. But I think once Trout got hurt, it literally and figuratively left them with like, shit, we gotta play him every day now, in a sense.
Exactly.
Because see, now, here's the thing. We all know that their season's pretty much over. Now, Artie Moreno needs to stop doing his Peter Angelos impersonation and go out there and get some. They need to get some guys around, because remember, Trout's got some age on him. Now, Shohei is still young, so, you know, if they truly want to contend and be, you know, they're going to be on the spotlight if you're talking on an international level, because they're showing his games live in his homeland. You know, matter of fact, when you watch, put this way, there was a game earlier this week I watched on Bally's California. It used to be Fox, but I don't know if they threw barbells at him to take the name away, but for whatever reason. But if Ohtani is batting in the next inning, they have a scroll. Ohtani is scheduled to bat third or the bat fourth. You know, but you know what, Edge? You gotta do that, because let's be honest, that's the only reason why you're not in an Angel game right now.
You remember when Barry was doing his thing?
I knew you were gonna bring up Barry. That's right. They did that.
I don't know.
Gary, they did that only because they're important to the moment. They're doing it now, and you're to their credit.
Bob Gibson was pitching and hitting home runs, but they forgot about that, didn't they?
Exactly. So you didn't have plus, but to be fair, you didn't have the kind of media back then that you got now. You didn't have this 24/7 feeding frenzy, whatever. And also, to MLB Network's credit, it's the same thing is happening with Miguel Cabrera, because he's one homer away from 500. And, oh, by the way, he's only 40-something away from 3,000 as well. So
that's right. Mickey is a bad man.
Now he's clean. Yeah. He's a Hall of Famer. They can't take it from him.
Well, they'll try. Remember, he won the Triple Crown, and they tried to tell, you know, he won the Triple Crown, and they tried to tell you, well, you know, Mike Trout had a better season. Oh,
that sounds like a bigger point.
Damn.
Because a guy like Miguel Cabrera should be lauded for being a great ball player, but because he's Latino, they say fuck him. You know, I mean, other than the trick, where did Mickey get any love? We didn't ever see any real major push to get Miguel Cabrera any kind
even
of
like
recognition.
Even when he had a Triple Crown season, they were trying to tell you that Mike Trout should be MVP. I mean, every Triple Crown winner, for the most part, has won MVP. If the award was, I know there was some pre-MVP, it was pre-traditional MVP awards where guys hit for the Triple Crown and they didn't get MVP because the award wasn't around then.
Are you telling me, T, that there's bias in baseball? No.
Give me a couple seconds. 2, 3, 4. Yes.
Yes. Gotta write this down. Give me a couple
there's
seconds.
A little,
yes.
There's a little bit.
Baseball.
There's a little.
Okay.
But no, hey, look, I'm trying to do the WUSA method of sports talk. You know, not just come right out and go ahead. Yeah. It's look, especially unfortunately, they still look at black and Hispanic players as subservient. Now they're willing to work with the Hispanic players in a sense because, as Gary Sheffield succinctly said, they can manipulate them a little bit more. Well, they can manipulate them more. But see, what's good is that even they're realizing, hey, wait a freaking minute, you know, why am I going through all of this, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's still there. Now, the good thing about Miggy is that he is very beloved in Detroit. Unfortunately, they've gotten to a World Series. They've gotten to a couple World Series while he was there, but unfortunately, they came up short. But see, Detroit, for all its warts and whatever, they're about as a hardcore baseball fans as you can, you know. Everybody always talks about, you know, St. Louis and Chicago being great baseball cities, but Detroit, you got to mention Detroit in the same vein. You know, the 68 Tigers are held in the same reverence as the 84 Tigers.
That's true.
And maybe even more so because of them coming back the way they did, and of course the whole racial upheaval that was going on back in 68. You know, Willie Horton is still a beloved figure, and by the way, rest in peace, Bill Freehan, who passed away earlier this week. One of the most underrated catchers of all time. That guy, you know, that guy was huge. Great catcher. Great catcher.
Hey, question. Who was that gangster, that convict that was the baseball pitcher for Detroit? Was it Freehan or something like that?
Outfielder.
No, I'm talking the pitcher in the World Series against Bob Gibson.
He outdueled Gibson in Game 7. One three games in the World Series. Oh, Mickey Lawless was a tremendous pitcher. You know, again,
he's the biggest criminal ever since Dillinger.
Oh no, you're thinking. you're thinking of Denny McClain, criminal.
No, you're thinking of Denny McClain.
Mickey Lolich's felony was eating too many donuts. That was his biggest. You're thinking of Denny McClain. Yeah, Denny McClain is who you're thinking of.
I take offense to that, sir.
Don't feel bad. Hey, you know what? I took offense first because I probably ate some of his donuts. So yeah, I got you.
I say, son, we got a serious problem here, son.
Your point's valid. Miguel Cabrera is going to be a Hall of Famer, hopefully one day. But the issue is, he ain't white. If he were Al Kaline, he'd be revered.
Oh,
he'd be
God.
God. You know, if he was
sure.
Hank Greenberg,
they'd
he'd
be breaking
God.
The doors down.
Sure, exactly. sure. Hell, Kirk Gibson.
Exactly. See, they'll get off on shit like that. And that's the problem that baseball will have to overcome. They're not going to do it with the structure they have right now. So, brother like Ohtani, his accomplishments, as great as they are, they'll always be made. He'll be relegated to the back of the bus eventually because baseball will be too busy trying to find a white player that can outshine what he's doing. Right now,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be hard to do.
And but you know what, Mike? In that same vein, though, they'll embrace him quicker than they would a Hispanic, or because, like I said, you see,
oh, yeah.
see the best thing going for him, he can't speak
mm-hmm.
English. Because see, I've
That's
always
right.
said, when Fernando lost weight and learned how to speak English, he was
that
done.
Was a wreck. That's right.
You know, if he had kept eating his hamburgers and didn't learn a lick of English, he'd have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still well revered. It's ironically they're celebrating.
Are you saying he started looking like the American? Is that what you're saying, T? He started looking like the American player.
Well, you know what? He didn't go so far as to do the blonde hair thing. Thank God. But you know, it wasn't quite the split. Put it this way: once he learned to speak the language, it was
Uh-oh.
Like, oh, now he was a. Oh, that's how they're fucking me. Oh, okay.
Exactly. He didn't go Sammy. He didn't go Sammy Sosa on this. Thank God. Yes.
Oh,
that,
thank
God.
Yeah. Really. Really.
Pinky. Sammy Pinky.
I'm at the. You know, Mike. I think he should be called Samuel Sosina at this point in time right now. Sammy Sosa.
Hey, I think it'd be Samuel Pepto Bismol. Yeah.
Sammy Sosa.
Pepto Bismol.
Sammy
God.
Sosa, as we know, is dead. But Samuel Sosita.
Yeah.
That guy, he works on.
He
I believe he works on Wall Street as a
broker.
He
went from Sammy Sosa
to
Cesar Romero as the Joker. I swear to God,
really?
And he looks like a fucking napkin now.
Please wait, Mike. Even Godfrey Cambridge said, "What in the hell are you doing?"
No, he went way back to Godfrey Cambridge. Next thing you know, he's gonna put up Don Rickles. Lord have mercy.
No.
Right.
The only reason why I say Godfrey Cambridge is because of Watermelon Man.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's an excellent movie, by the way. But as
oh,
we
yes,
come
sir.
To
classic.
And Cotton comes to Harlem.
Yes.
Oh yes.
As we come to the top of the hour, though. We must take our time here to pay homage to Brother Gary. He came through. He is Negro Domus. He called it. He said that there would be a mega conference or conferences one day because these greedy motherfuckers couldn't help but the possibility of engorging themselves in cash from all the TV money made available. Yes, indeed. He is, Gary is our cash cow.
And you know the interesting thing here, Mike, with this smorgasbord that they're trying to do, all of
yes.
them now, how are they going to see? I'm guessing that the big holdup here is because, see, you know, the Pac-12 has their own network. The Big 12
yep.
has their own network, and the ACC
has
their own network.
Yep.
So,
if you
yep,
want
to
call
like,
a network, I don't know what the ACC got.
Well, it's a, put it this way: it's enough that if you're a fan, you'll find it, and you know if you've got the right cable hookup
yeah,
right, and whatever,
make a left turn Albuquerque and trip over your feet, and you find it.
Pretty
right.
much, but see, the biggest thing I think that's holding this up is who's going to be the top dog. Because I envision a
Notre Dame. Is Notre Dame
no,
in that
well,
somewhere?
That's the quiet factor here because people forget. Notre Dame has basically an incestuous relationship now with ACC.
Sure
now, are they going to buy? Now, are they going to buy into the Big 56? Or they're going to be like, nah, we got me. Yeah. On the surface, you would say no. But, and I hate to invoke the butt sisters here, but
Please do.
Put it this way. If they basically say, look, we'll make it so that you are the top dog in this thing and you can make money, all sorts of whatever, they may be like, okay, you know, go on.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah.
Because look, they already know by themselves they can make goo gobs of money.
Yes, sir.
Now it's just a matter of do you want more goo or do you want more gob in all of this right now?
And T, in the case that it said to be hosting the game, you got to be a conference champion. So Notre Dame, and they be ranked number one. They had to go on the road and play.
That's the thing. Now, and see, the thing that they're not telling you about some of this is that I don't know how true this is. Apparently, you know, with the whole new playoff or what have you, there are going to be teams that can actually host games.
Exactly.
So
Not bowl games.
Hosting at their home.
Some cheddar, the parking.
Exactly. Who? And see, that's the new wrinkle.
But once you get sick, so what, people be farting and spitting, drinking beer on you, and you might lose about 30,000 or 40,000 people. Bring that cash in.
That could happen going to Piggly Wiggly for all they care. So it doesn't really matter.
Cracker Barrel. You're right.
Yeah. But see, that's sort of the unknown factor here because, you know, look, they have been trying for years to get Notre Dame to, quote unquote, get with the program. But,
Notre Dame was arrogant
because they were able to write their own ticket. Remember, they were the only school to negotiate a national TV deal.
And they do travel.
And by the way, did you see the preseason top 10? They're number 10.
Exactly.
They make sure they slide them in there. Now it's up to them to stay there.
Notre Dame just lose every fucking game the year before, but they're always being the top 19 in that year.
I got Mr. McGrady here. Now I'll ask the question one more time. Ask the question. When will the MEAC...
Come on, Gary.
I'm not trying to bring you down, Gary, but it ain't going to happen.
I know you're not supposed to ask a question with a answer a question with a question, but what will they, you know, end of the day, what would be the advantages of HBCU's Big Four getting together as one?
Gary, I got a question for you. Deion Sanders, in all his loudness, tried to bring attention, and look how quick the people in the HBCU turned on him. Now, he's the one that's trying to bring attention, and guess what? Now ESPN has come running. But some of these conferences have been in existence for many of years, including the NEAC, and they have not changed with the time.
Well, look, they're just waiting for Notre Dame to come to their senses and join the conference.
Put it this way.
Here's the thing, guys. And you know, we've gone back and forth. You are probably the 1,350,716th person that has said, why don't y'all get together for the good of the kids,
right,
in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But see, here's the thing. When you're looking at what the Big 12, the ACC, and the ACC is trying to do,
mm-hmm,
and on the surface, it could be okay, but
mm-hmm,
on the whole, see, I'm, you know, my thing is, I want to see the four, I want to see our four families, so to speak, stay together.
Yes.
because of the very thing that we talked about at the top,
mm-hmm,
of this. Traditional,
yes,
rivalries, traditional history,
mm-hmm,
built in, whatever. And there's, you know, the bigger question to me, and I think all of us have said this or whatever, play up your uniqueness as opposed to doing
exactly
what all the
Thank
other
you.
White schools are doing. Because,
Thank
again,
you.
My whole thing has always been the MEAC's history, the SWAC's history, the CIAA's history, the SIAC's history. They don't have to take a back seat to no damn
anybody. That's right. That's
all
right.
The more reason, all the more reason why they need to stay in lockstep because of their tradition. Now, some people
right.
may, you know, now look, we've already seen where the white schools have basically said to hell with tradition, cut the damn
mm-hmm.
check. And in that
That's
vein,
right.
and in that vein, I agree with, you know, the black schools should go out there and do that. That's why you got A&T and Hampton in the Big South. That's why you got Bethune and FAMU in the SWAC. So
right.
the basic idea, the basic premise is there. But even with all that being said, they're still holding true to tradition because, see,
yeah.
think of how much noise is going to be made this year with the SWAC. And none of it has to do with Coach Sanders.
Yeah.
Notice I didn't say Dion. But the thing is, the SWAC, even the MEAC, while they're going through their self-inflicted wounds here, they
mm-hmm.
still have their tradition. You got to remember, they're just coming off of their 50th anniversary. Now, of course, it got muted because of COVID and the defection.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they literally were sitting at home alone with a Stop and Shop made birthday cake and nobody
yep.
to blow out the one candle for them. But see,
really?
now they have the opportunity to get this right. And to be quite honest, the SWAT has already led the way with that by, you know, in a sense,
yep.
infiltrating them.
Is it unfortunate
that they went to another black conference and did
right.
it?
And when it came
yeah.
to the celebration bowl, just look at the numbers. You had the big-ass stadium in Georgia that the Atlanta Falcons played, and between 24,000 and 30,000 at our marquee game only showed up. I mean, Gary, this is what I've been trying to tell you.
And the sad,
when I'm
see,
at,
and the sad
I,
thing
I,
is,
when I'm at a
and the sad
LA
thing
game
is, Reg,
and maybe 2,000 people show up, that's embarrassing.
And
you
see,
know,
the sad
you,
thing
you
is,
you got the camera on up there, and they got to show end zone because there's so many empty seats besides the people at football games.
And the sad
that's our fault.
That's what I've been telling you, Gary.
I'm a California Reg. I would love to see a HBCU game in California.
They did play years ago in California.
Yeah, they played
Rams played one year.
They played all over.
California. Gary, they did not. Hold on. Gramlin did not play in California, at least not to my recollect. They played in Portland, Oregon. I know because I was at that game.
But they did. Mike, Winston and Gramlin played each other back in the late
2000s, in the early 2000s.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Forgive me.
Let me go back.
I'm bad,
yes.
I don't say that to one up, but I'm just saying
it's the thing where all the, you know, see how HBCUs have gotten over, not so much gotten over, that's a terrible word to use, but the classics. You know, we have the traditional ones, you know, the Circle City, the Bayou Classic, the Heritage Marine Classic. But see, there's always been other classics. There's always been other classics in other parts of the country. To me, you go back to that and bump it up even more. First of all, the
Whitney Young Classic should never have left the Meadowlands.
You took the word.
That was the pinnacle right there, buddy.
Exactly.
Everybody
wanted
to go to Jersey.
To me, whoever winds up being the next commissioner of the MEAC
has got to put that game back. Yes.
You have to.
Yeah. Put it back.
You have to.
For the 4 years I watched that game, there hasn't been less than 45,000 people in the Meadowlands for that game.
Yes, sir. And that's why I said that really moved the basketball tournament to Baltimore. And they're trying to get their players back.
Me and my dad, every August, we would go out to Yankee Stadium every year for the HBCU game, whatever it was. We would go to Yankee Stadium every year. For 5 years in a row.
See, what happens to see, the sad thing to me is that the league seems – When we watch the Celebration Bowl and we see barely half the whatever dome they're calling it now in Atlanta, half full.
Yeah.
The MEAC and SWAC, they say, hey, we're on TV.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
I get that, but you gotta have, you know, that's so short sighted. You gotta think bigger than that. You've gotta think bigger than that. Look,
let me throw this in,
that's
Tony.
What I've been so pissed
the
off
game
about.
That I saw where Grambling played Portland State, there were so many brothers and sisters who came there on word of mouth. Now, Portland State Stadium is in downtown Portland. It holds maybe 35,000, 40,000 people. That place was so black that night. Especially after the Grambling Marching Band came on, I literally saw woman make her husband turn away when them sisters came out.
Was this a European woman that did that?
Do we even have to ask that question?
What Coach Williams was talking about after the game, because I had asked the question, is this the farthest y'all ever had to go to get a road win? And he said yes. And he said that because they wanted me to ask the question, because he said afterwards, y'all make sure we get a bigger cut next time, too. Because they really did.
Damn right.
They
used entertainment.
And that stadium was still
in halftime.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And see, it's the whole look. I think all of us are familiar with the fifth quarter. Now, when I talk to folks that have no idea what the fifth quarter is, I'm like, okay, don't leave after the game is over. What do you mean?
Yeah.
I said, don't leave after the game ends. And then they hung out, and then, like, literally 2 hours later, I know what you mean.
Man, they got excited.
And see, for any age, that's the norm for any game. You know, put it this way, an L.A. Dodger fan could not go to an HBCU game because they would miss all of the stuff.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
They might as well just
the band. This generation got to stop. We can't have y'all niggas in no more. We canceled the damn contract. I don't know what the Big South gonna do this year.
See, again, I'm not trying to play both sides.
I hear exactly what you're saying, Gary, because you're not the only one that has said this. You won't be the last one. But if and when they – put it this way. I hope we all live long enough to see it happen, because that'll mean that the old guard is – see, what's holding back to me is the old guard.
It's the old president. The president,
it's
right?
It's the old guard. And see, right? It's not just the – it's not just one guy. It's a conglomeration of them. That's the reason why good, bad, or indifferent, they dislike Reggie's buddy in Mr. Harvey down in Hampton, because he's thinking beyond all of that. He's still he's just as much of a loyal HBCU as anybody. But God bless him, he wants to make some cash.
Yeah,
that's all. It's his biggest. Put it this way. If his biggest crime is that he wants to make cash for Hampton University, then put him on the chair now. Put him up, you know, put him on the electric chair tomorrow, because that he's going to do that. As arrogant, as indifferent, as whatever. But the one consistent thing about him, he's out to make money for Hampton U. That's his deal. And see, unfortunately, You've still got this old guard that still doesn't want to join. You know, they still consider themselves colored. They're willing to sleep with the enemy financially or whatever. But folks like yourself, Reg, and others who have been loyal foot soldiers covering their games and what have you. They tell you what – they basically give you their ass to kiss and then wonder why they don't get the same sort of coverage. Because, newsflash, you guys were getting press before you decide to go to bed with the mouse. Now, I get it. You want to see – you want the games to be seen. No problem. But just know what goes on. I mean, they basically let's be very, very, very clear here. They look at the black schools the way they look at the little league. What y'all going to do for us? What y'all going to do? How much money you going to make for us? That's it.
It's true. And remember, every time an HBCU becomes a victim for somebody and they get that check because they have decided they're going to go get their ass whipped, it doesn't even cover the house when they play at that field. Like Delaware State knew they were getting $500,000. Now, doesn't matter if they're playing at Michigan or whatever, another Division I school, they're not getting that 40% of the house. See, they've given them a blanket amount to cover because they've already decided to underwrite whatever else is there. And, of course, the HBCUs are saying glad to get it, because it's more money than some of their departments pick up in an entire year. So we understand why they play victim for the game and shit, which is why we love Appalachian State even more for trying like they did. The bottom line is that they don't care. And this is more, I won't say segregation, but it's definitely aimed to punish the black schools, and the black schools must develop a different mentality to make sure that when they do this, they understand the full ramifications of it and then try to adjust from what pennies they gave them from there on. And I think there's too many of these guys who think themselves too above it. And they fuck up the football programs because they think, well, we didn't do it like that because we're the talented 10th. Fuck the talented 10th.
Hey, Mike, you got to understand something. We got to respect our own brand. As T-Mac pointed out, when you got the oldest damn basketball tournament in the nation, over 100 centimeters of scattered basketball tournament, and you have your fucking championship game played on tape delay? Come on, man. You know, once again, that's what I'm trying to tell you, guys. That's
what I'm with you, Reggie. If somebody's not going to be there to aggressively pursue a different deal for them to show that their game is valuable, then what do you expect them to do what they're going to do? You know, they have to do a better job of selling and promoting what's already there.
Thank you.
You know, it may be a bit blasphemous, but maybe you'll understand what I'm saying when I say this. Look at the NFL.
Now, Roselle, to his credit, he sold that game. He sold the sizzle, not the steak.
Yes, but he
did. Once they got to the modernization, even more so, then, because see, the thing with them, with the NFL, the reason why it may take a little longer for the NFL to sort of drop dead, so to speak, is that they have numerous their ways to make cash.
Yeah, that's
true. We always talk about how the season ticket holders money, the TV money, and the NFL properties money is given to them even before they do a mini camp or a training camp. But see, they have these other, they have the other income streams. Now they're basically in bed with the gamblers now. The contract for NFL Sunday Ticket comes up after this year, and literally Disney and HBO and all those entities are like, excuse my French, they got their dicks hard because they think we can grab that. Now they've already got a relationship with Amazon Prime. They already have their relationships, online and in their own separate entities. And remember, the NFL is 32 separate fiefdoms. So
that's right.
Even the goddamn Detroit Lions got people standing in line. Yeah, exactly. Even they have people waiting in line being like, can we advertise with y'all? Can we be the official ass scratcher of the Detroit Lions? Can we be the official whatever of y'all? And they'll be like, we'll get back to you. But see, that's the thing. And see, you have to take that sort of mentality. Now, look. If they're still playing the whole, and look, I get it. I understand that you are a educational institution of learning. I get all of that. You need to remind your white counterparts of that shit, to be quite honest with you. But that's a whole other story in and of itself. But see, if you claim to want to be like them, then act like them financially. As much as we all have an indifference with Boyce Watkins at times when he sort of comes off as arrogant in regards to financial stability and what have you, the basic premise of what he's saying is correct. You've got to be able to sell your brand and, most importantly, keep your brand viable. How many times have we heard they need to be led kicking and scratching into the 21st century? They're still in, God forgive me for saying it, they're still in the Chipman circuit. The mentality is still in the Chipman circuit. Now, in and of itself, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Chipman circuit because it made, it gave us great talent. It gave us Red Fox. It gave us Lena Horne. It gave us Moms Mabley. It gave us Lou Jordan and so many other folks. But, and I have no problem using the Butt Sisters in this instance, you've got to go beyond that. You can't be like, you cannot be like the NCAA and want to have these 1940 values while cashing 2021 checks. You can't do that because you don't have the same cash. You don't have the same cachet as the NCAA. And look at how the NCAA is scrambling now to try to be still relevant.
Yeah.
That's all. You got the ball coach around, too, T. You got the ball. Hey, we don't need the NCAA no more. We can go ahead and get our own pay these boys. We don't need them no more.
Exactly. And see, in many ways, the big Pac 47 or 56 or how many of them they wind up putting together in that thing, this is their way, in a sense, of countering the NIL.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Everybody's got to understand.
Maybe this many years.
Yeah, 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 because, you know, we talked about it on the show the other night, you know. And, you know, now, to be honest with you, probably all football-wise, it might be the best thing that could happen to him. I don't know. I don't know what happened to them over the years because
this is the equivalent of trying to kill a fly with a jackhammer. Because these mergers are trying to squeeze the market. They know there's no way if three conferences, not just one, as Gary was saying, not one, not two, three fucking conferences decided that they have to merge for the express purpose of competing. Come on, y'all. We know there's some big dastardly shit going on.
Well,
36
Michael,
schools.
How dare you, Mike? How dare you?
Mike, I guess the question needs to be asked is, what are those three conferences not doing?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's the question.
Yes.
That's the one that's been
asked.
We saw the ACC start making money when those cocksuckers from Clemson started. The SEC has always made money. And it seems like every year now that this playoff has been in effect, it has become the SEC Invitational. Texas understands that. Oklahoma understands that. That's why they're trying to get the fuck in there by 2025. They don't see they don't see a faster solution to the problem. And that's exactly what made these three conferences decide that we are better together trying to get a piece of this pie than being out here by ourselves. Every conference makes money on the bowl games. We know there's at least like 50 bowl games every year, right? So how many?
There's 39 bowl games.
Okay,
For now.
How many teams from each conference get in? What's the price of the bowl? Who gets what for the bowl?
I was a kid, 16, 17 years old. There were only 17 bowl games. 17.
Right.
But I got to tell you, it was about 10 years later. There were 21 bowl games.
Mm-hmm.
In the past 10 years, it almost quadrupled.
It almost like 45. I think it got up to like 45 at one point. But see, think about that.
Yeah.
Now, there are 120 schools playing Division I-A football. So the old model was when you had 17, basically, you had 34 of the 120 that were going to play. They were going to play the Liberty Bowl game. Exactly. Now you've gone from 39. See, I didn't know there would be math today. Shit. 38. So basically, you've gone from 34 teams of the 120 that play postseason ball to 78 of the 120
5 and 6. What are you doing?
Thank you. There are at least two teams that have losing records and still were bowl eligible.
That's what
you're talking about. If we're not talking about the big money that's involved in the playoffs, we're also talking about smaller sponsors that are trying to pick up the other dollars, those Harlem Bumpy Johnson dollars, by having a smaller bowl game with a smaller take. But if they're smart enough to get two schools that travel well, shit, they'll fill that venue up. It won't take long for, say, Chick-fil-A to sponsor them or McDonald's or anybody else. They know. This is why it's important to bring those games like the Whitney Young Classic back. So a black business can go in there and say, this is our game. This is where we market. This is what we got to do.
Mike, I'm about to do something blasphemous.
I'm going to say something nice about the fucking New York fucking Yankees. Say what you want about Steinbrenner. Say what you want about the franchise. Say what you want about their history or whatever. But those motherfuckers from the Bronx would always make sure that the Whitney M. Young Classic got done, whether it was done in the Meadowlands or whether it was done at the actual stadium. So that vein, I've always given them that much of a credit. And the fact and see, to this day, I don't know who put the kibosh on it at all. My gut tells me that the black schools fucked it up, and they just said, you know, we're getting tired of dealing with these folks. We're just gonna go ham on it. And it you know, again, I don't have any information to back what I'm saying, but the fact that the Whitney M. Young Classic still not exist in this time now. And again, remember, this was done well before COVID. Because see, the catchphrase now is so quick to say, well, it's COVID. No, you fucked that up 5 years ago.
That's exactly
right. You can't blame COVID on that.
I'll say this, Tony. I took my baby girl, my youngest daughter, Debbie, when she didn't really know what the fuck football was, to that game. And my cousin, my niece Latoya, was also at the game with my brother. Because I wanted her to see this. And she knew I was crazy about football, but I wanted her to see this. So they were there, and they were probably eating cheese fries, not caring about what was going on. But she had to be there to experience it. And that feeling of all of those folks enjoying the game, even if the game wasn't very good by a certain time, they were digging it. The vibe was there. Folks were loving it. The post-game concert, all that shit was awesome. And that was us.
It was like a super, you know, it's whenever you have these classics, you know, the traditional one, or either the traditional ones or the non-traditional ones that they whatever, it's like Super Bowl week, because basically there's events leading up to it. They'll have like little Scott, like, you know, Reg, you know, is Reg still there?
No, he disappeared.
Tony, my dad, we get up early in the morning, drive 2 hours to Yankee Stadium, 2 hours, get to the game early, and for an 8-year-old, 9-year-old boy, that was the most fantastic I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Those are memories that you'll have forever, you know, no matter what. And see, my whole thing is that should be part of your promotion. That should be part of it. You know, you can't do it all off of memories, but years ago, when Nat King Cole had his old show on NBC.
Yep.
He had a 15-minute show on NBC. Now, the fact that he had only 15 minutes, you know, that's another conversation in and of itself. But when they eventually canceled the show, you know, they asked Nat, you know, what happened or whatever. Well, I guess NBC is afraid of the dark. And you expect that from white folks. You don't expect that from your own. And see, that's the thing that is so bothersome here, is that you have folks in major decision-making things that are literally and figuratively afraid of your own kind. That's the thing that's bothersome. And see, now, the one hope that I have is that there are a lot of, for lack of a better word, progressive thinking folks within the HBCU community. Now, they're still somewhat being muted out by the old heads. And as morbid as this may sound,
I'm sort of just waiting for these folks to I won't come right out and say I'm waiting for them to die. I'll just say I'm waiting for when they move on and their influence isn't placed in the same importance, because literally and figuratively, that to me is what's holding the HBCUs back. Just see, look, I'm not saying you got, see, I take the attitude of the Negro Leagues, and that's, to me, that's the way it has to be done. Okay, y'all don't want us to play in your game. Y'all don't want us to be a part of the system. Fine. We'll do our own mess, and we'll make money off of it. And if y'all should come calling at some point, maybe we'll talk, maybe we won't. Now, but the thing is, if you're going to talk, if you're going to talk with them, talk like they're coming to you and not the other way around. Because so many instances, it seems as though they're coming to these entities with hat in hand when they truly have the power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that's most bothersome, is that they don't realize that they do have, at the end of the day, they have the power, but they either refuse to use it or don't realize that they can use it. And see, the worst way is that, well, we've done it like this. We've always done it this way. And, yeah, it's made you a few bucks, but wouldn't you want to make a little more or be more? Because, see, that's the thing that's so bothersome with the Celebration Bowl. They damn near don't care that the fact that they're playing in front of a half-empty audience. Their whole thing is, hey, we on TV. But, beyond that. You've got to go beyond that. That's all. Now, look, if you don't want to go beyond that, that's on you. But don't bitch about it, too. Don't want to not move forward, and then when you're given an opportunity to move forward, well, I don't know if I really want to. You know.
Exactly. And then the short-sightedness of BET, TV1, whoever the fuck else is out there who's supposed to be black this, black that, blackity, blackity.
Oh, man.
No, that's all their fault.
Mm-hmm.
You could grab this and work at a different level, at a platform that was doable for everybody, and it would have worked. But you're too busy trying to be so fucking conservative, and you're worried about offending white folk, that you wouldn't even go that far and say, well, wait a minute, this is ours. You know, where were the people who understood why Jet and Ebony worked? They're gone. You know, they sold out whatever the fuck they could because they were tired. They didn't care anymore. We don't have enough people that care anymore about this big picture mentality. And because of it, we suffer. And as Gary, I want to go back to where he started with this, as Gary predicted, we sat on our hands, and I think it was 2016, I surely could be wrong, but this was 2016 when Gary first said there's going to be a mega conferences that will eat up all the big fish and even the little fish, and there'll be nothing left for us to pick up. And that's exactly what is happening right in front of everybody's eyes. I reiterate, 3 conferences, not 1, 3 conferences. Okay. 3 conferences have decided that they see the big picture and they're fearful that they'll get thrown in the wash. So they're going to merge and make their own deal so they can stand up to the power of the SEC.
Michael, the reason why I kept saying that was because of the basketball conferences when they were doing it at that time.
Well,
remember, the WCC, the WAC out of West, they increased
it to 14. I know what you're saying, Zeke. But the basketball, football schools is what Tony was getting at. The point he was making was like,
okay, the WCC and WAC are all basketball powers.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And they increased their membership to 3 or 4 each. Well,
I get that.
Okay, here we go.
But the Gonzagas, even as popular as the Gonzagas have been, the Gonzagas, the Pepperdines, you know, the Seattle, all those San Francisco, they're smaller. They operate in a smaller paradigm. Football operates in a much bigger paradigm.
It's
not even close. So a basketball school like Gonzaga, they know to stay in their lane. They're not going to expand. They've gone as far as they can go when it comes to NCAA and basketball. They've become a major factor in that regard. But they know whatever they're making money-wise in Gonzaga, it can't even touch what one of the schools in the Pac-12 is making off of football. Think about what USC makes on football. Gonzaga with a 10-foot pole. And that's why this issue of money is so important.
Okay.
Look what they can do with that. Look how the endowments
increase.
They stay in the conference and they basically do what Rutgers and Maryland do, get paid, and hope that eventually that the more money they bring, they got to take it. You know what? They take the attitude of like it being a big ass fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
they take it as a big ass fundraiser. To their credit, though, they've had their moments. You know, the Jason Kidd era, they're still living off of the Jason Kidd era. And,
football-wise, this is some decent football.
I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Beast Mode, they've had, you got to look at it big picture-wise. I know, a lot of times we sort of get caught up in looking at what's right in front of us. And I get that. I understand that. But you always have to look at the totalness of it. Think of it like this. Do we remember Jordan for the 6 titles in 8 years? Or do you remember the last 2 years when he was the hamstring king in D.C.?
In D.C.
Do we remember Willie Mays for the catch in 54 and his overall career, or the 73 World Series where he's still trying to find the fly ball that was hit right in front of him? You got to look at it. But that's the thing. You always see. My thing is, I know I'm a slave to it, but I think there's merit to it. You have to know your history so it can help you deal with your present. Because if you've been somewhere before, you should always be able to use that as a trump card in a sense to keep things forward. Now, again, over the last few years, Cal football, I'm not going to say they're the West Coast version of UConn because they probably have had even more success than UConn. even them being on the lower rung of the Pac-12 is still better than anything.
They're making money, Tony. They're a gob short of a goo gob, but they're making money.
Clearly, their goo gob is a small g and another small g.
Yeah.
It's this.
Exactly.
But you know what? They got the two G's, though. It's steady.
They can go to the bank just as easily as any other school. As a matter of fact, Rutgers was probably looking at Cal Berkeley and saying,
Robin,
we can do
Robin
that.
Bay, Robin Bay, yes,
we can do that. Look at their profit margin. I mean, if we got to go straight business on this shit. They saw the profit margins of all the mediocre mm-hmm. schools, major schools. I mean, can you imagine what Mississippi and Mississippi State must be making to endure getting
Mike, let me take a little further. When I was at the Mouse, we had a bunch mm-hmm. of guys. We had a couple of guys that were Rutgers grads, and
they refer
to themselves as SUNJ, SUNJ, the State mm-hmm. University of New Jersey. That's how they consider themselves. If I had a dollar for every time when they would score a touchdown, SUNJ, SUNJ, SUNJ. Sons. And I was thinking, are you guys having an asthmatic attack? No. Sons. State University of New Jersey. Okay. But see,
mm-hmm.
they have gone beyond that. I don't know if I ever told you a story.
Right.
You know, we have billboards here on and off, right around that country park where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going down near the street. I see a billboard for Rutgers University in the middle of New Haven, Connecticut. Now, I shit you not. This was about 10 years ago. I shit you not. I was like, first of all, I almost got into an 8-cop pileup because I was like, what the? Rutgers University advertising?
Mm-hmm.
Not in Connecticut, Not in Hartford, not in Bridgeport, not in Cobb, New fucking Haven? I'm thinking, now it was gone after about a month
That's
or so,
true.
But the
mm-hmm.
fact that they had the temerity to come up here and put their, to basically plant their big, fat red ass in the middle of Connecticut. you got to have more balls than sense. Even Boo Boo the Fool would be like, "Well, that's fucking bold."
Yeah, it's true. And because of it, they understood we must increase our profit margin. Now, how do we do it?
Yeah.
So methodology dictates that we must invest X millions of dollars, get noticed. That was basically their promotion pack. And Vince Patrick talking about it as well, we realized, Rutgers is like, hey, you know what, we're mediocre, but we don't care being mediocre if we can do it in a more affluent conference. And that's what they did.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, man. It's NC. I say all that to basically say, if fucking SUNJ can do that,
mm-hmm.
why can't FAMU? Why can't Bowie State? Why can't Arkansas Pine Bluff? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's the thing.
Come on.
Because if the goddamn State University of New fucking Jersey can do that shit, why
mm-hmm.
not you? Why not
wow.
us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to paraphrase Leslie Nielsen, these are our lands, and those are our fucking trees. You know, that's
oh, yes. So now think about what the so-called mainstream media is going to do with this. Now, there's no way they can tout this being a great thing. You know, but see, they also won't say, well, we're going to go right on ahead and perpetuate this notion that those kids are amateurs and they're playing for dear old PU. No, the whole thing is PU. It stinks because they know those kids
mm-hmm.
won't get any money until NIL. And now that NIL has come into the mix, how is all of this going to sort itself out? Because they haven't talked about the playoff expansion and how many more teams will be added and how that money will get distributed. Because if it's 12 teams now, I think it was $22 million ultimately between four schools each. So
in the
championship, to that final four. Now, if you've got 12 teams in the mix, and let's just say for round out purposes, it's $20 million for each school to get in.
I don't think they'll be able, you know, and maybe I'm just speaking naively, but I don't know if they'll be able to do 20 G's for all of them, because they have to, because see, I take it like this. You know how in the NFL playoffs, like if you win your wild card game, I think you get like 8,500.
If
you win a divisional game, it's 12,000. And then if you win the conference championship, I think it's like around 28 or 30. And then the Super Bowl, of course, you know, it's ridiculous. So I think that they would probably keep that still for, like, the final four teams would still probably make a little bit more than, like, the last, than, like, the 12th team. And see, I'm trying to figure out, are they going to seed the teams? Because, see, obviously, I'm guessing they're going to have, like, I'm guessing, like, say, the top four will have byes, I'm guessing. And then basically, you know, 5 through 12 will basically, you know, fight it out tooth and nail. And, you know, the lowest seed will play number one, the next lowest seed will play number two, and so on and so forth. And so on. Now, they may have a completely different way that they're going to do it as well, but it's, you know, the ante will get up. Put it this way. The 20 that they get now may wind up being a little bit more. Let's say they go from, because I think, who was in the champion? I forgot. Whoever, it was Alabama and whoever last year's thing, and I believe the payout was 20. So I'm guessing with the new thing, maybe it's 25.
Exactly. So if we've got 12 schools, and if they do it on a staggering scale, ultimately, to get to the final four, the pot may increase to 30 or even 40 million for each school that gets that far. And that is the goal that they're not talking about. See, we've never seen articles in depth talking about how much does each school make as they move up the ladder. Now, we've talked about this with the basketball tournament because we know it's multi-level, and each level you pick up an extra X number amount of cash.
One for you and one for me. Two for you and one, two for me. Three for me and one, two
for me.
Exactly.
That ain't never changed.
We know now the pot will be humongous. And the schools understand it will be humongous. And Mark Emmett and his pimp cartel know it will be humongous.
And these three conferences started coming. They said, let's do this now while we can solidify our place.
Yeah, and see, remember, When they're giving the pairings out for the NCAA men's tournament, you know, invariably you'll see, you know, some dweeb from the Big 12. Well, I thought we should have got nine teams instead of the seven that we got in, and that's his wallet talking. You know,
I'll never forget, 1984,
1985, the SIU Salukis
were 28-28-7.
They lost the last game of the championship game. Conference tournament, and got a free ticket to the NIT. They got a free ticket to the NIT.
That's right. And they did it because you didn't matter. They said, SIU, fuck them. We wasn't expecting much from them anyway.
And you're
right. I'm not being facetious.
They had the highest score in the league. They had the best defender in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the best offense in the league.
They got sent to the nothing, you know, nothing indignant tournament, basically.
And we need to understand the desperation in which this was done, because the more we talk about the money balancing out, three conferences decided they had to merge to handle what was coming.
Yep.
They already know Texas and Oklahoma are going to join the SEC in 2025.
Yep.
They said, fuck this. We're going to jump the turnstile and head up and do this thing on our own, because we know when the carvings come out for who gets what,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be sitting in the background again. Think about the college tournament as it stands now. How many Pac-12 teams have made it to the Final Four? None. How many Big Ten teams have made it to the Final Four? One. How many ACC teams make it? Well, they have at least one, only because of Dabo Swinney, who hasn't resigned yet, you motherfucker, from college football. So they know what the deal is. They know what's ahead of them. They merged out of necessity. And that's why this was a desperation move, and that's also why in this business where speculation is so important, you have an ability to forecast and see beyond all of that. And this is why I'm lauding my brother Gary, because Gary stayed on this. He stayed on this like he stayed on the Washington football team, like with the Pepe Le Pew resolve. He kept on going and talking about this. And we have to give credit where credit is due. And as he is taking a bow for this, he's also going to take a bow on what's going on with Oakland, because that same paper that just brought this headline out is now saying how Oakland and the people involved are having issues with whether they're going to have a stadium in the city for baseball only, and that the scenario is likely that the team will move to Las Vegas. Gary
How funny is it? Oakland will finally come up with a stadium and ain't got a damn team to play in it.
How about that? There you go. See? Well, gentlemen, we have passed this out fairly well. Final thoughts, gentlemen, if you will.
We're less than 7 days away from the first games for college football for this Thursday night. Yep, barring something crazy with this hurricane that's coming our way, apparently we're all gonna die, from what I've been told. So Mike, at the very least, I'm going to call out sick on Monday at this point in time right now.
Just look out for flying houses. White women on bicycles.
And a lot of half-eaten donuts. But yeah, I'm going to put this way. I already got my line down. I'm going to be dead Monday, but I'll probably be able to come back on Tuesday.
There you go. Well, just be safe, my brother. G, you are the man of the hour. Give us some Negro Domus wisdom, if you will.
Well, this Tuesday in Tokyo, Japan, the Paralympics start. I got a new article on this. What they have done is they will not allow their assistants to go with them to Tokyo because of the COVID-19
now they think that the COVID exists now. All of a sudden it's like
so we have three American athletes who cannot go because they can't carry their assistant aid with them.
Holy
this is a crying shame. I'm gonna do an article on
This is
speaking of that, I completely forgot. Tomorrow, it's on NBC. I believe it's 4 o'clock, but I'll do like they do on TV. Check your local damn listings. I ain't going to do the work for you. apparently, three folks who finished 1, 2, and 3 in the women's 100 are going to do a match race with Miss Richardson.
Oh, shit. That's the Jamaican sister, bro.
Now, I thought they were going to wait for the World Championships, which starts next year, but apparently they're like, we need this, you know, and being sisters, you know, we need to settle this shit now. Mike, I don't know if they're taking off their earrings and putting on Vaseline before they start running. But,
you know they're in trouble, that's right.
With somebody yelling at the top of their lungs, oh, bitch, it's on. It's on now. It's on. Until Gary brought up the Paralympics, I completely forgotten about it, but somewhere along the way.
Everybody did.
I know. Isn't NBC Sports Network showing it live, showing a bunch of things live after the Paralympics?
So,
you know what? I just answered my own question, which means they'll probably, you know what? Knowing the way that they did this, they'll probably be showing Monday's stuff on Thursday.
Thank you. I am thoroughly disgusted with this right now.
You're shocked and appalled with two P's.
With two P's. That's right. Well, gentlemen, this has been fascinating. I have loved this, and I like the fact that our hard work has been recognized, because real journalism isn't getting that gotcha moment and getting that front page headline. It's grinding and seeing the path to an inevitable goal. We saw that when Gary was talking about how he manifested, how he followed through, and he remained steadfast to it. And that's how the business is supposed to be done. This is where the editor looks at you and say, great job, now go do it again. And that's what we have done. So to remember the ancestors and those who kept cranking it and grinding, we say we're holding it down, we're doing what we're supposed to do, and they gave Gary an extra pat on the head and said, job well done, young fella. Because ultimately, these conferences merging, the extension of the SEC can only mean one thing when it comes to the bottom dollar. Here's the fucking crime.
Pour the coffee and even park the cars. I get to drive the fat bastard straight home from the bars. And all of these jobs, I'll do them with pride. I'll gain the trust and soon I'll live large and start to thrive. And this thing about this is the only way. Kid from the street can climb the ladder and make prime pay. Growing up where I did, you get to see a lot of things. The guys in this club were like a local king. They had the finest broads, all willing and able. In any restaurant, they got the best damn table. Pinky rings and rocket Cuban cigars. They had shiny suits by the dozen in the trucks of their cars. To a kid like me, to get this far, Andrea Dory, social club to face a local bar.
No.
I had dreamed of this life since I was 10. Finally made it straight to the center of a lion's den. So to make my phone see, I do what they say. Cause I'm looking to a future, to a brighter day. When I'm a full goomba, I make gum, make up, running scams for grands off of some straight-laced chump. All of these petty tasks ain't just for nothing. It'll all be worthwhile when I get my button.
Gotta get my button, cause I gotta get paid when you're made. You're the man when you're not, you're just nothing. Gotta get my button, cause I gotta get made when you're made. You're the man when you're not, you're just nothing.
So enough about me, let's break it down to the crew. I'll tell you who the hell they are and what the fuck they do. I'll start at the bottom, then I'll move up the line. No matter what So when push comes to shove, if the shit hits the fan, he's the man. You gotta love Tony Fingers.
Got the thing?
Another cat in the crew just hijacked an armored truck. The driver turned up low. Tight with the Don and a stand-up guy. He'll hit the trigger on his gun before you blink your eye. The guy knows the biz. At the track, he's a whiz. The good with the ladies, yeah, the pussy fizz. And speaking of chicks, the Don's consigliere pick. With his foot fetish is enough to make everybody
you
sick.
Well,
he may be a cleaver, but he keeps the record clean. Money filters through Geneva, important guy on the scene.
Big shot, get my buddy, cause I gotta get paid when he's paid. You're the man, when you're not, you're just nothing. Big shot, get my buddy, cause I gotta get made when he's paid. You're the man, when you're not, you're just nothing.
Now Don DeVito's a large man and a legend with a sword. Coming up as a soldier, they used to call him Brass Hall. Prince on the street, the man with the master plan. Took me in at 15, so I'm his biggest fan. But he's not without critics, even in our own crew. That would entertain Pauly Gaga if he ever knew. To me, he's the best, to that I will attest. Came up from the streets, and I know he wears the crest. A Don is a Don, regardless what it is he does. So DeVito's the boss, cause because it's because.
What is
this girl I know all of my life? I wouldn't call her a slut, but still she's far from a wife. When I was a kid on Delancey Street, I knew she'd be Gumata bringing drama to somebody's.
True.
Sexy and smart, her name is Gabrielle. Whip of her perfume, you'll see your members
smell.
Girl got it all, but still she's well adjusted. Word has it, she's the only one that Don's trusted. She's not just a mall like us, she's on call. With all Gabrielle is, you've been a Don like fall.
Gotta get my buddy, cause I gotta get paid when you're paid. You're the man, when you're not, you're just nothing. Gotta get my buddy, cause I gotta get made when you're paid.
See you tomorrow night at 9 for the Music Therapy Mindstream. Everybody out. And for all of us here at the Tree, go safe, stay safe, be safe. Ciao for now.